You are listening to A Good Book on Sun Sounds of Arizona.
Kirin's The Spell of Noan, written and narrated by James D. Priest.
The clan was gathered at the foot of the immense tree, grateful and proud about their new home. The ancient term Galanon, meaning sublime guardian, was chosen for the second portion of the name. During the ceremony, murmurs and nods of approval came when I, as new magician, first pronounced the title, Rogue Galanon. I heard it repeated over and over in hushed tones, clan members intoning Rogue Galanon, analyzing and relishing their new home's name. Lost all these moments in thought, it was within that tree and that chamber the old magician now shuffled, tea flagon in hand, from the cooking area to the fireplace. Sitting down in his chair, he positioned his long feet to warm them, relaxed with his tea, and listened to the fire crackling. A familiar sound, a Kirin's great toe tapping on a hollow portion at the base of his door, interrupted his thoughts. Resonating through the chamber, the sound was as recognizable to him as a door knocker is to a human. He wondered whether this visitor would have any word about the missing hut and the two Eilon. The burden of fatigue and worry returning to him, he chose not to rise. "I know every clan member. I'm worried about the missing lad, but confident harm isn't on my doorstep." "Come in," he called, and the always unlocked door opened. Only the fire illuminated the chamber. Blinking and looking toward the door, Spekeren couldn't see anyone. "Who is it?" Someone stepped inside.
"I came for help."
"Hutt, is it you, lad?"
"Yes," said Hutt, approaching the fire, "and I'm in great need of help."
The magician got quickly to his feet. "Where have you been, lad? We've been worried to death. We've known you to act impulsively, but leaving in the middle of the night? That takes the cake. Do your parents know you're back?"
Spekeren started for the door. "We must tell everyone."
"Wait," said Hutt, raising a hand. Spekeren turned and glared at him.
"I haven't been home yet. We felt you were the best one to approach."
"And who are we?" The magician paused. "Sit down, little one. Tell me everything." He ushered the lad to a chair by the fire, then sat down opposite him.
"I'm glad to tell someone," said Hutt, green eyes glimmering in the firelight.
As Spekeren listened intently, Hutt poured out the last day's amazing story, from his cousin's arrival in his room, to their reunion with Tally, to their journey home, the lad leaving out not a detail. The magician was fascinated by Olamon, the special knowledge, Raydell's disappearance, and the quest on which the youths must embark.
"Jilin and Tally," said Hutt, "are half a clan dominion to the south with Tally's raven. I brought Stala and Asa home. My cousin and Tally, sir, are in great danger. They'll soon depart on a journey to a destination known only to them, but one that's far, very far. Whether they receive help or not, they'll follow Olamon's instructions and go. If they ask for help, I hope we give it. From what I know, without support, they'll go alone on a mission so dangerous that there's little likelihood they can succeed." The lad stood up. The old magician had barely moved a muscle while Hutt told his story. Now, shifting in his chair, he took a deep breath and arose slowly. He paced stiffly past Hutt toward the cluttered workbench. There he slid open a drawer, extracted a small wooden box, and placed it on top of the bench. Opening the container, he removed something, then turned and moved slowly toward his visitor, examining an object that gleamed in the firelight. "These are rare," he said, "and possessed almost exclusively by magicians. They have many functions, seeing the past and future, indicating location and direction, and communicating over distance. They also translate speech,
allowing communication not only between Kirins who speak different dialects, but with humans. He shook his head. I haven't used this half as much as I should have. Hutt recognized the bright object as a calamar, identical to Jilin's. But if I had, continued Spekeren, it might have been me the three youths found in the woods instead of Olamen. Sitting down in his chair, he stared at the calamar in his lap. We will help your friends, Hutt. We must. We'll help them so they can help us all, the Kirin race. I've feared this day's coming for a very long time. What should we do next? Asked Hutt. Spekeren looked up. Your companions are from the Moger clan. We must at once, tonight, call for a gathering of the two clans to formulate a plan. Rising and ushering Hutt to the door, he wondered precisely what the two youngsters knew that made things so desperate for them, and suspected the answer was in the calamar in his hand. Chapter 11. At the edge of the gathering platform, among the startled animals and birds encircling the meeting, Spekeren and Duan were in heated discussion. Earlier that evening, at Spekeren's request, messengers had left Rogalanon and sped on Ilon to Rogustan, the Moger's home tree. The messengers requested that their neighbors come to the Yorl tree for a meeting of the two clans, though it was approaching midnight, and the meeting's purpose wasn't disclosed. Duan, the Moger magician, and his clansmen responded without hesitation. The entire clan, save sentries, arrived on Rogalanon. Around a freshly stoked fire at the platform's center, members of the two clans exchanged nervous greetings in the cool night air. They glanced frequently at the two magicians, anxious to learn why this surprising gathering had been called. Mogers asked Jarls whether they had any news of Tali, Jilin, and Raydel. The Jarls said they didn't, and that Hutt, too, had been missing, but suddenly turned up and was here this evening. All suspected the meeting would be about the unexplained disappearances and the still-absent youths. Bird and Animal Ilon, waiting at the outer border and in nearby branches, were as poised and well-behaved as usual. Duan had welcomed the invitation. Had it not come, in fact, he would have made the trek to Rogalanon the next day on his own. Having discovered something appalling, he needed consultation with another magician. The two magicians were discussing an old and bothersome issue. Spekeren was trying to convince his friend the time had finally come that some magicians and common Kirins feared. For years, magicians had been divided into two factions, one believing all was well with Kirin magic and its high council, and the other suspecting problems in that realm. Duan held the former belief, Spekeren the latter. Spekeren related Hutt's astonishing story to his confrere. What else could explain the ghastly thing trailing the youths and one disappearing? Asked the Yorl magician. Duan, those are youngsters of your clan. You must begin to recognize something desperate is happening. Wishful thinking will do us no good. Our magic, said Duan, trying to get a word in edgewise, has functioned flawlessly for eons. It seems impossible. It's not impossible, it's happening. It would mean such trouble, thought Duan, so much misery if he's right. Our lives have been comfortable and serene for so many years. But hearing Hutt's story finally convinced Duan, especially in light of his own discovery. He tried to interrupt the Yorl magician, whose words continued unabated. Stop for a moment, said Duan. Let me say something. But it was to no avail. In recent times, the state of Kirin magic had ceased being a topic they could discuss. Mention of it brought on argument, unpleasant to both, and in which neither made headway. Speckeren had learned not to broach the subject, and simply kept his opinions to himself. "Perhaps I'm wrong," he told himself many times, "and for the good of Cairns everywhere, I hope I am." Thus, when the question was reopened and new evidence was available, a stream of arguments came from Speckeren as he ventilated suppressed opinions and fears. "I have something to say," declared the battered Duan, "which might prove you're right." Speckeren went silent. Duan cleared his dry throat and began. "While I was walking in the woods this morning, not far from our tree, I heard a child's voice calling my name. I looked around. No one was there. The voice came again, this time from close by, saying, 'It's Raydell, and I'm scared. She's one of the missing youngsters from my clan.' I looked everywhere again, in the trees, on the ground, in every direction, saying, 'My dear girl, where are you?' 'Right beside you,' she said. Something touched my arm, and I almost jumped out of my skin. 'That was me,' she said. 'Don't you see me?' She sounded every bit as frightened as she claimed to be. 'No, lass, I can't see you,' I said. She moaned. 'Then that's what's happened. I was caught by a—' 'No, I can't say another word.' Something awful had occurred, but she wouldn't tell me what. Since it happened, she'd been alone in the forest. When she found out I couldn't see her, she became even more frightened. I told her, 'Come home with me,' but she said, 'I won't,' and no matter how much I insisted, she wouldn't come. I told her to stay where she was, so we could find her again." Speckeren nodded. His friend's discovery confirmed his own suspicions and lent proof to his arguments. But he didn't press Duan further. His compatriot was already confused, old beliefs dissolving before his eyes. "I've told no one about this," said Duan, "not even the girl's parents. Throughout the day I thought of nothing else and began to admit that something worrisome might be creeping into our lives." "We must inform the clans," said Speckeren earnestly. "Something must be done, though I'm not certain what." "I suspect," said Duan, "that Raydell, Tally, and Jilin know what must be done. I'm afraid to think what dangers their presence might bring, what assaults might have to be fended off. But we cannot leave them alone, frightened and vulnerable. We must rescue them from self-imposed exile and bring them home." "My sentiments exactly," thought Speckeren, "and so movingly expressed, my previously misguided friend. Well, you leapt out of your shell in a hurry, and just when I needed you and your old flair and energy. You've mellowed over time. I haven't seen you so stirred up in years." "I agree wholeheartedly," said Speckeren, reaching out a foot to touch Duan's. "We must act. To not do so could prove the far greater miscalculation." As the magicians strode to the center of the gathering, clan members hushed. Speckeren spoke, and the crowd listened with rapt attention. "It will be difficult for some of you to accept in these tranquil surroundings, but something is wrong, very wrong, and it goes deeper than the disappearance of four youths and three Ilan. I believe something devious is at work in our world, and recent happenings confirm it." A shiver ran through the assemblage as the magician continued. "The problem's full scope isn't known to us, but might be to the missing youths. We know where they are, and can summon them any time. But to do so will place us in jeopardy, the full extent of which is unknown. Through no fault of theirs, the youngsters are in peril. They've stayed away to protect us, to face the danger by themselves. If they can make such a choice, what decision can we make except to bring them home? What happens after their return might be anything but pleasant and could be catastrophic, but we've no time to waste. It might be too late already. Do I hear any dissent?" His answer was a virtual chorus. "Bring them back," shouted some. "Where are they?" cried others. Most were bewildered by the astounding turn of events, but all wanted the youngsters back, no matter what danger it brought.
Speckeren asked Rugum, Chamter, and Deliani to accompany Hutt to the hiding place of Jilin and Tali. Another group, led by Duan, would go for Raydel. As the rescue parties were preparing to depart, a cry of sorrow pierced the air. It came from a small group of Mogers near the gathering's edge. Duan had imparted grave news to Raydel's mother and father. Chapter 12. In an attack mode known to few Kirins, three Granums were stalking the exhausted Jilin and Tali in the dark of night. Clinging to each other, the youngsters were asleep in a tree hole near Rogalanon. But a change had occurred in the tactics of the three nearest Granums. When Kirins evade the creatures more than once, Granums can suppress their incessant, single-minded drive and shift to a more cooperative style of aggression, working with fellow Granums. Acting individually, when a prey is near, they often become frantic and dispatch an involuntary wave of excitement. Hutt and Jilin sensed it in Hutt's room. Raydel, Tali, and Jilin experienced it at Oleman's grave. One advantage of Granum's working together is that they give no warning of impending attack. A short distance from the youngster's tree, two of the Granums sat on the ground, featureless heads erect, silently transmitting information about their prey to each other and a third Granum, a quarter of a clan dominion away and approaching from the east. In constant communication with its two comrades, it moved in the stiff, determined fashion of its kind, pushing tirelessly through underbrush toward its companions and their goal. Transmissions between Granums, could they be intercepted, would be foreign to Kirins, humans, all natural species. Through remarkable telepathic faculties, they communicate ceaselessly, but their messages consist only of strategies for tracking and assaulting enemies. They have no concept of victory, no thought of defeat, no idea of morality, and no understanding of emotion. They are fearless, merciless, and live only to stalk and destroy. The two near the foot of the tree had learned their prey was in a resting state and were accompanied by a bird, stationed near them on a branch. They took notice of the bird only because they discovered, through telepathic probing, it had a relationship with one of their victims. The bird was awake and vigilant. The Granums assumed it would warn its masters if they approached, and their quarry would escape again. The creatures assumed the bird would soon fall asleep, and they could attack with relish. They didn't know this was an Eilon, and that it would stay awake, protecting its masters while they slept. The Granums showed no interest when Stala, with Hutt on his back, jumped from a neighboring tree to the oak providing haven for the runaway Kirins. The Granums exhibited no reaction to Stala moving down the tree toward the hole where the fugitives lay. The Granums paid no attention to the ravens of Rugum, Chamter, and Deliani landing gracefully on a branch nearby. But as soon as it was apparent these newcomers had come to help their prey, the Granums were on their feet and moving stealthily toward the tree. They industriously ascended the trunk and were nearing the hole when the rescue party departed swiftly on Eilon, Jilin and Tali with them, leaving zealous pursuers behind, empty-handed once more. Incapable of feeling frustration, the creatures descended to the ground and resumed the relentless stalking of their quarry. When Hutt had arrived, Jilin and Tali didn't argue. The prospect of being in the bosom of the clan, no matter what peril it attracted, was too much to resist. The trip to the Yorl tree took a short time for Stala and less for the ravens. Upon arrival at the gathering place, outpourings of relief filled the air.
So good to have you back.
We've searched high and low for you, and now you're here. You should have returned sooner.
Jilin's feet and Tali's were touched by friends, clutched by their fathers, and caressed by their mothers. Tali's mother noted something she'd never seen before, a ring on Tali's toe. She was asking about it when Spekeren's voice rang out.
Resume your places so the meeting can continue. It's been a long night and all's far from settled. Please restoke the fire.
Clansmen did so, and Spekeren began anew.
We welcome our lost youths home, but we must now formulate a plan to ward off our enemies.
Looking at Jilin and Tali, he chose his words carefully.
Hutt told me you cannot reveal everything. Your knowledge attracts danger, but we must know something about what we confront. My young friends, come forward and tell us what you will. Start from the beginning.
Hand in hand, Tali and Jilin moved toward Spekeren and the fire. By now, the clans knew Raydell's fate and realized something unprecedented was happening in their normally serene forest. Standing beside Jilin, Tali began, her green eyes sparkling, blonde hair radiant.
The three of us found Ullamon in the woods, she said.
She told of their discussions, revealing nothing of the content. Of Ullamon's death, summoning her raven, and spending the night alone. She took the ring off her toe and held it up.
I saw Jilin and Hutt through this, and was drawn to them through its magic.
The crowd was mesmerized. Next, the dark-haired Jilin spoke.
Hutt came with me. We used his Eilon and his sister's,
interrupted by rustling and agitation of ravens in one section of the perimeter. Jilin froze as a granum hoisted itself over the platform's edge. Tali screamed. Pushing its way through the alarmed Eilon, the creature began plodding toward Jilin and Tali. No taller than the Kirin's it was passing, it had two long arms, two sturdy legs, a white hairless body, and a face vacant and smooth. The crowd parted before it, shocked by its appearance and foreign demeanor. It was halfway to its victims when Halset of the Yorl clan stepped into its path. The monster stopped.
"Where do you think you're going?" asked Halset, unsheathing his blade. "What business have you here?"
Reaching out both arms, the creature grasped him by the arms and raised him overhead, his knife clattering harmlessly to the floor. The beast hurled him to the side, and he struck a bystander with such force that both were rendered unconscious. The creature started again toward Jilin and Tali, extending its arms in their direction.
"Hutt!" called Jilin. "Your knife!"
The granum was passing Hutt, and he sprang toward it, pruning knife glinting above his head in both hands. A stabbing stroke to the rear of the smooth head stopped the creature in its tracks. It turned toward him, dark fluid pouring from the wound. Reaching for him, it began collapsing before touching him, then sprawled on the floor, the foul wound still seeping. Heads turned to see a second Grana moving toward Tali and Jilin. Stepping from the crowd, Deliani attacked it from the side, her knife blade grazing its head and neck. The creature turned to her.
"Strike it from behind," called Hutt, too far away to do so himself. But it was too late for Deliani.
The granum gripped her by the torso and propelled her through the air to the edge of the platform, where she landed heavily and lay stunned among the frightened animals and birds. The granum turned toward its victims, but Rugum Chamter had learned from recent events and stepped behind the single-minded creature.
"You've come to the wrong place," he cried.
With his wood-cutting axe, he rained down such a blow to the back of the rude head that it gushed a dark putrid fluid, and the fiend slumped to the floor, never to stalk again. The onlookers were panic-stricken and gazed in all directions.
"Are any more coming?" asked one.
"None that I see," said another.
"Here, let's help those who are hurt."
"What's that awful stench?" asked one, a hand over his face.
"It's coming from the monsters."
"What manner of creature could these be?" a shaken clansman asked Spekeren.
"I believe they're called Granums," he answered unsteadily, glancing toward Jilin and Tali for confirmation. Shocked, clutching each other, and unsure what to say, they said nothing. Hutt answered, "They're the monsters I told you about, sir, stalking Jilin and Tali and Raydel. I saw one here last night, on our tree, coming after Jilin."
"Yes, little one," said the magician, collecting himself. "My good Kirins," he called. "Bring the injured close to the fire, so they might better be attended to."
Those hurt were helped to the center. Inspecting them carefully, Spekeren was thankful to find none seriously harmed. The beleaguered throng circulated, discussing the dreadful events, but all stayed clear of the gruesome carcasses defiling their sanctuary's floor. With no further disturbance, the horror of the ordeal began subsiding, and a semblance of order returned. Plans were being made to house the visiting Mogers, and a few host Kirins were leaving for their homes when a small girl's scream shattered the quiet. All faces turned toward her. She was pointing to a tree branch above as the third Granum leapt from it and landed beside Jilin.
Kirins, The Spell of Noan, written and narrated by James D. Priest.
To learn more about Kirins, visit www.kirinbooks.com.
You have been listening to A Good Book on Sun Sounds of Arizona.